Broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne, this is Wilms Front, brought to you by the Unshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this special end of week edition of Wilms Front. Well, special in that we haven't had a Friday show for quite a while, but as I said last Friday on Trad Tasman Talk, Dewey Du Bois is busy with the New Zealand election, so I thought it'd be the perfect time to relaunch for the time being Friday night Wilms Front. The date is the 7th of August 2020. We are live on the Wilms Front YouTube and DLive channels, and we are also live on Entropy, the YouTube and DLive enhanced software where you can ask either myself or my guest tonight questions. You can send through Super Chat and participate in the poll, which is where would you rather be right now, in Victoria or in the USA? So it's 7:05 here in lockdown, masked up and curfewed Melbourne. I've also got to add permit to work Melbourne as well, because the permitted worker scheme papers please is now in its second day of effect, but that's not the topic of tonight's show. We're going to the other side of the world, to the United States of America. Well, the unity of those states is being severely tested in the lead up to the November presidential election. The southern states are experiencing the nation's second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. In between the first and second waves, Black Lives Matter 2.0 was unleashed onto the United States cities, triggered by the death of George Floyd after he was arrested by Minneapolis police on May 25th. The body cam footage or dash cam footage has just been released, which gives a bit more context into the events leading up to his arrest. These Black Lives Matter rallies and the fellow travelers who joined them unleashed a wave of terror onto the streets of the major cities of the US, with left-wing extremism promoting racial division, which transformed into looting, rioting, property destruction, unprovoked physical violence and murder. The cities of Portland and Seattle on the US West Coast have almost descended into anarchistic mob rule, and California currently resembles a failed state. But how does it actually feel to be an American on the streets of a major city during these times of civil unrest? Well, my guest tonight will provide us with exactly that firsthand perspective. Justin Nolan went viral for holding up a racism doesn't exist sign at a Black Lives Matter rally in his native city of Cincinnati, Ohio. He has subsequently launched a YouTube channel called Lies Among Us, which he elaborates on his political philosophy and views. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And now it's just after 5 a.m. In Cincinnati at the moment, so you've got up very early and you've got a day of work ahead of you. So I'm very appreciative of you being an early riser, because I'm not myself, I must admit.
Neither am I most of the time, but I decided to get up early for you, Tim.
Well, you are wide awake. I'm not seeing any sign that you're still bright and chirpy. Now, let's start with, well, what turned you into, I wouldn't say a viral sensation, but certainly you made a point that went viral at one of your local Black Lives Matter rallies, which is the reason why I refer to it as BLM 2.0, because it was first around in the 2016 US presidential election cycle. And we saw there were riots in several cities. Even police were assassinated by one sniper. This is a literal culture war on the streets that has been going on for the past 5 years, and it's back and it's even worse now.
It is so much worse now. BLM was peanuts compared to what it is today. And it's gained widespread acceptance, but also widespread condemnation because of how big it's gotten and how active it's become out of seemingly nowhere. And I like to correct the record on one thing you said. The protest that I was at with that sign was in Columbus, which is the capital of Ohio in the center. And there, BLM and Antifa and a group called ARA, Anti-Racist Action, which I believe is worldwide, they are much more active there than they are in Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a bit more conservative-leaning as far as the cities go. But Columbus, you know, they're crazy over there. And I was out there for a protest, and the people there, being the doxers that they are, they immediately pull their phones out when they see me with my sign. They start doxing me. They found me through local political groups, and that's how I became viral. They started sharing photos of me, and at that point, after they started sharing photos of me and they knew who I was and they were messaging me and they were screen capping my profile and all this stuff, I'm like, well, guys, I guess I have to make a statement now. So I go online, I go on Facebook, I make a statement that says, hey, so this picture has gone viral. Yes, this is me. And I regret nothing. I have no apologies to make. And I'll do it again. And man, when they saw that, they flipped. Because they knew I wasn't backing down.
Were you in any danger immediately when you held up that sign? Because, well, for example, here in Australia, we had, because our annual Australia Day, National Day of Celebration, because that's when the British First Fleet arrived, there's always what's termed Invasion Day protests in our major cities. And in Australia Day 2019, a man stood on the steps of one of our iconic train stations, Flinders Street Station, wrapped in an Australian flag and was almost lynched by the Invasion Day protests. So what happened to you when, because you are clear, you were standing there on your own, you were clearly visible.
Well, thankfully, the crowds were separated between the people that were there for the rally, which was an America rally. It was a pro-America rally that we were at, and they were counter-protesting it. We were out on the state grounds at the state house, and the counter-protesters, the BLM, Antifa, and so on, were separated onto the street. So except for a few people that leaked in through the crowd, trying to be agitators to the speeches going on, the crowds are very separate. And the people on the right, while many of them disagreed with what I was saying or thought maybe it was too bold, none of them tried to be violent with me. So they threw a lot of threats from the street, but because there was a huge line of police between us, they knew to do that, because you know how vicious people can get. There was no violence enacted towards me, just a lot of threats. Now, if I go back to Columbus now, on my own, alone on the streets, and someone recognizes me, there is a chance I could be threatened like that. But fortunately, I have a lot of friends who I was with there and who I know around the area who, you know, will have my back in those kind of situations. So I'm not worried about that kind of thing at all, even though they keep making those threats.
So the rally that you were attending, can you just elaborate what was the aim of that rally?
Yes, it was called Stand for America. And the idea was it was the counter movement to the sort of anti-American sentiment we've had through BLM, through Antifa, over the past few months following the death of George Floyd. And it was actually organized by a lot of my friends, by a lot of the people I know. And we had Back the Blue people, you know, who are supporting of the cops. We had people who support the Second Amendment. We had all anti-mask people who are against the mandates and the shutdowns and all that. And it was just like a coalition of a whole bunch of conservative and right-wing viewpoints that are finally standing up for America, finally standing up for our rights, and not afraid to say it. And we had a very diverse crowd. We have a lot of interesting perspectives there. But, you know, whenever you have anything that's pro-America at all, you're going to have the Democrats' brown shirts come out of the woodwork and try to counter-protest it. So it was really just a pro-America rally. That's all it really was. But, of course, they always come out to protest it because they're not for anything good.
That's the same here in the major cities of Australia as well. It commenced in 2015, the emergence of the modern Australian Patriot movement, and now local Antifa, socialist anarchist groups, they always came out and counter-protested, got very violent, covered their faces, which, well, that's what you're supposed to do now these days with the coronavirus. But there's a lot of our political culture, not just our popular culture, is heavily influenced by what happens in the United States, and that includes the cultural Marxism. And we had the Black Lives Matter rallies imported into Australia to apply to disadvantages of our Aboriginal people, which is these are the type of people who don't like the Americanization of our culture, but it's okay when it's social justice. And the one that we had in Melbourne, this was in between, well, I call our first wave a phony wave, but it was in between the phony wave when we were just reopening, and then our legitimate first wave, which is really bad at the moment. And now we're under stage four. Six of the attendees at that rally tested positive for the coronavirus. Our Premier Dan Andrews, during the first lockdown, was threatening people with fines and was the slowest to reopen. But when the Black Lives Matter rally happened, he just said, "Oh, just don't go." And only the three organisers were fined, and there was at least 10,000 people there. So that was the clear double standard there, which you also see over in the United States.
Well, it's not just about being a double standard. It's on purpose. When you really think about it, it's very convenient for these politicians to be able to say, okay, your movement is not allowed. You are not allowed to group up. You are not allowed to discuss. You are not allowed to organize. But these people over here that we like, that we agree with, they're fine. It's not on accident. It's on purpose, because they know that these BLM rioters are working towards their agenda. I literally call them the brown shirts of the Democrat Party, because that's what they are. They are the violent arm of the leftist institutions. And of course, you're going to find leftist politicians aren't going to try to stop them, because it's politically useful for them to be around while being able to say, "Oh, you right-wingers who follow the law, who actually respect authority, you're not allowed to meet."
And that was on clear display, the weakness of the mayors of Seattle, Jenny Durkan, and also the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, which, as I mentioned, we have our own Antifa down here, but we know that it was Seattle, which was the birthplace of the modern Antifa movement, Rose City Antifa, where it all began. Mm-hmm.
Rose City Antifa is the most active Antifa in the United States, for sure. And it's unfortunate. Seattle is used to be a wonderful city. And now that it's been under leftist control like this, and very progressive leftist control of that, with the way their mayor is, it's a real shame what's going on. They would literally allow the federal courthouse to burn down if they wanted to, because they don't want to stop any of this violence. They don't mind it at all, because, again, they're on their side. You got to understand, these anarchists, so-called, which are, they're really communists, they're not anarchists at all, they love to force whatever ideals they have down your throat, but these so-called anarchists are only allowed to do what they do because the leftist mayors in their cities allow it. They're acting like they're being all, you know, they're being so badass. "Oh, I'm out here taking down the man." Well, no, the man's behind you. That's why you're doing this. If the man wasn't behind you, you wouldn't be getting away with all this stuff. It's insane.
And yeah, you're hardly sticking it to the man when big brands like Nike are behind you.
Exactly. When McDonald's is sponsoring your movement, shouldn't that make you rethink? Shouldn't that make you think, wait, am I really on the right side of this? If all the corporations I hate are on my side, what's going on there? I think a lot of it, honestly, is the corporations don't actually care. They just fear the backlash they get if they don't fall in line. That's the same thing with the NBA players and most of the athletics around here. You see them kneeling. Most of them aren't doing it because they really care, but because they fear the mob.
It's the same with our local sports here. When our Australian rules football season relaunched, all the players took the knee before the start of the game. Now the AFL players and the rest of the season is now being played outside of Victoria, which is actually the home of the AFL, because of this the pandemic really breaking out in community transmissions here. Our state's native game has had to flee, and currently our city is a ghost town. That's why we're sort of us in Melbourne now sort of seeing what getting a taste of what things are like in Los Angeles, Seattle, and Portland. And yeah, it is quite scary, because you don't know what it's like until you're there. And with this stage 4 lockdown that we have, there's a lot of more businesses that are going to be destroyed. And well, you look at Portland and Seattle, imagine trying to operate a business there.
It's a real shame. And I want to remind everyone, because I feel like this is something that's not pointed out very often, is that what's the turmoil in these cities is very much localized to these cities. Most of the cities in the U.S. are doing fine for the most part. But of course, you only hear about where it's really, really bad. So I'm not trying to downplay it, because it is still terrible what's going on in Los Angeles and Seattle, Portland, and other areas. But it's not some like doomsday disaster that the media wanted to portray it as, because they of course they're trying to portray it that way. They don't like to see anything as good. They only like to show you bad news. They don't like to give you more fear, more anger, more resentment towards other people. That's part of their division game, is trying to make things worse than they actually are. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So
it's
terrible what's happening, but it is localized. And I mean, here in Cincinnati, things haven't changed much at all. So it's not the end of the world, fortunately, yet.
Yeah, the USA, it's a nation of over 300 million people, and they're certainly good cities and states in the nation where life is excellent compared to what's going on. But the reason why I highlight what's going on those West Coast cities to what's happening in Melbourne is because it shows what decades of cultural Marxism spread through the education system, the media does to the next generation. Like, for example, I can't believe with these Black Lives Matter rallies that are continuing that these young people, they're prepared to go out in the highways like zombies to risk getting run over. I mean, as we see shared around on social media all the time, those cars playing through those protests. Why are young people doing that?
It's like a game to them, and they've never experienced real violence in their lives, because they've been coddled since they were born. And they've never experienced a situation where they're really in any danger, because they've grew up in these suburbs, they've grew up in nice areas, they went to nice. And so finally they get the chance to, you know, go out and make a difference, but they don't realize how dangerous the world really is. So they don't think, they assume that everyone's good-willed and good-hearted, and no one's going to try to run them over, and they're all afraid of them, so they're just going to get away with it. Well, it turns out reality hits you like a stack of bricks, or like the front of a car sometimes, you know? And, I mean, this is nothing new. This has happened for a long time. Vegan protesters have done this exact same thing for decades. They would stand up in front of trucks of pigs going into the slaughterhouse, and they would stand in front of them, and some of them would die doing that as well. It's a tactic as old as time. And really what it does is it tries to play the narrative that they're peaceful, when if you're in the street, you're not really being peaceful. You're blocking traffic. You're impeding on people's business. And that's not peaceful on its face. You have to be on the side of the road for that. And it makes it so that when they get hurt, they can act like martyrs. So none of them think it's going to be them, but they know it's effective. because the media will play it out as if they're peaceful and as if they're getting hit by, you know, white supremacists or something like that. And that's exactly what they do. They eat it up.
Even though the driver who killed one of the protesters on that highway in Seattle, the driver was black.
Yeah, well, they don't care about that. They only care... Notice how they don't mention the race when the guy is black. They'll mention it when he's white. They'll never mention it when he's black because that doesn't fit their narrative. They'll let the people who are willing to find out. But what they rely on is low information people that get all their information from them. And they know that that's actually, unfortunately, a lot of people. There's echo chambers now all over the place where even if you consider yourself informed, you're looking up online things, really have your ear to the ground, you're still in a bubble, and the media knows that if you're in that bubble, you're not even going to know that the driver was black, and you're going to think it was racist anyways. So they just do it. They don't care.
Let's talk about your sign again, which I'll put up on the screen again. So racism does not exist. Most people, even a lot of conservatives, would disagree with that because I agree that on the whole, it doesn't exist. And I remember it was summed up well by Candace Owens when she was testifying before a committee. Where she said that, yes, white supremacy does exist, but it's so insignificant that it's irrelevant to the current needs of the African-American community.
It doesn't exist in the sense that the word itself is a fake. It's a lie. Because when you really think about it, hate does exist, and there are people that hate each other for their skin color, but there's also people that hate each other for a million other things. And whenever you hate someone, whenever you judge someone for any reason, you see yourselves as superior to them. So why are we making these special words specifically for race when really all hate is exactly the same? When if you hate someone for what they say, for how tall they are, for how ugly they are, or how fat they are, it is the same exact hate as hating them for their skin color. I don't believe we should be using these sort of categorizations for something that is absolutely the same everywhere it goes. And the thing is, what the word racism does is it keeps you focused on the physical rather than the spiritual, rather than what's within. So you only care about skin color in so many scenarios. You know this with George Floyd, for example. It was a white cop on a black guy. Boom. Racism. Because they're only looking at the skin color. And they're only looking at the skin color because of this word. But if you instead focused on actual hate, instead of just these words like racism, you actually looked at what's really going on, then you wouldn't be deceived by that. You wouldn't be just looking for skin color. You'd be looking for where hate actually lies. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to see the hate in yourself. If you hate these so-called racists out there, you're not going to see that hate within yourself. And what you're going to end up doing, which is what we're seeing with BLM and Antifa burning down buildings, is you're going to fight the hate you perceive with real hate. And it's just going to breed more hate. It's just going to breed more problems. And you're just going to be used by this word. I mean, think about this. Whenever someone calls someone else a racist or calls something racist, they're instantly dehumanized. It's like, you know, in Terminator, the robot's eyes go red and they go, target acquired. Go after that. That's exactly what happens to these people. You call anyone a racist and immediately they'll just, like they're under a trance, go after you. Even though they have nothing, they have no idea who you are or what you really stand for. They just go after you because they're controlled by this word. And the whole point of the sign is to point out, hey, hate is hate. There is no reason to try to categorize it. This word is fake. It's being used to manipulate you, control you, and give you a false perception of reality. You're being used by it. That's a general message with it.
I agree that the definition of racism or the application of the word has basically become meaningless because it's just being used as you're saying as a weapon to try and silence people. But obviously, you admit that there has been racism in the history of the United States based on skin color, which African Americans did have lesser rights than white people, which was obviously the greatest example of that was slavery.
Racism, no, it's never existed. It's like saying that classism exists. It's just another Marxist term for something that already had a word. And a word for that, which of course did happen, you know, hatred towards black people based on their skin color, is hate. It's always the same thing. There is only good and evil, hate and love, right and wrong. It's a spiritual battle. It is not physical. That's the whole point. And when you try to categorize these words, this hate and love with words like racism, what you really effectively do is you ignore the other hate out there, is you downplay the other hate, which is exactly the same spirit, and you end up being misled by it. So, I mean, hate existed. You know, there are more people back in the day that hated people for the skin color, for being black, but now there's more people that hate people that are white. It's the same thing. It hasn't changed at all. But because people are so obsessed with racism, they don't see it. They don't see the spiritual battle within. If we stopped trying to legitimize these Marxist terms like racism, sexism, and so on, then we could actually focus on real hate rather than this perceived hate that is being generated. I mean, look at Martin Luther King, civil rights leader. How many times did Martin Luther King, the civil rights leader, use the word racism? You probably can't find that many quotes. Why? Because he had a message of actual truth, of actual love and hate. That is what he focused on, and that is why his message was so effective. He didn't focus on the physical, he focused on the spiritual. And I'm just trying to get that same message to people. It's not about race, it's not about gender, it's not about all these isms. It's about good and evil, right and wrong, hate and love. Everything else, all these physical attributes, just aren't relevant.
Black Lives Matter, in its first incarnation, was born out of incidents of police brutality where African American, mainly men, died. And at the time, I agreed that there was a problem with police brutality in the United States. I mean, the fact that every federal department has a SWAT unit. I've heard about raids where they've killed dogs and that, which just seems way over the top. But anyone can be a victim of police brutality. It shouldn't be just seen, and this is where I agree with you, as a race issue. And well, you're the American here, so I'll just get your take on the issue. What should be the actual issue under consideration, which is police brutality, making sure that police are there to help, not harm.
Right. And I mean, honestly, police brutality is another lie, because in most of these situations, what you find is that the violence is justified. And it's like with George Floyd, for example, they had the knee on him because he dove out of the cop car and asked to be on the ground. Okay, well, we'll have you on the ground, but we have to restrain you. You know, what happens with so-called police brutality is that, and I actually made a vicious cycle infographic of this, I'll share it with you later, is that videos are taken out of context, like with George Floyd, where you see the police being violent.
Yeah, I'll put it up on
right,
the screen.
Right, it's exactly that. You know, fear is stoked because videos are taken out of context and they're spread everywhere. People think it's racism or they think it's brutality. You know, people look at that, they get angry at the police, they resent them, they lack trust in them. And then when they finally get arrested for something like George Floyd, they freak out because they think that they're about to die, because all they've been given is this fake narrative where police are super violent, where they're terrible people. But really, that's a completely media manufactured script that's only in their heads. It's not real. Most cops are legitimately good people. They wouldn't be doing the job otherwise. And there's a few bad ones out there, but you know, they do their best to weed them out. But because of this fake narrative where they show only videos out of context. They don't show what happened before then. They don't show what the so-called victim was doing. People end up in fear of them. They end up acting out. And when they act out, of course, the cop has to get more aggressive with them, because how are they going to deal with them otherwise? If people like George Floyd, instead of assuming that cops are going to kill them, just said, man, I'm going to go to jail. I might as well just take this common civil. And he just sat down in the cop car like he was told to. He wouldn't be dead today. But because he freaked out, and because presumably he was on drugs because he was even more paranoid, he ended up dying. And that's a real tragedy, because it creates this vicious cycle where more and more people are being hurt, more and more people are dying because they see this narrative, because they freak out, and because police have to respond aggressively. If we drop this fake police brutality method and realize that not all, but most cops have your best interests at heart, then we wouldn't have this kind of brutality, because people would be civil with them. But they're not being civil with them, and that's why they're having to put out so much force. It's a real shame.
Because the narrative that's put forward even in our media, it's told to people such as us who don't understand what it's like to be, for example, black while driving. They claim that black people, when they get pulled over by the police, just a random highway patrol, that they fear that they're going to die.
Well, you know, that's another one of those assumptions that people make because of the word racism. They think, oh, well, cops are racist, and the cops just pulled me over, and I'm black, and he's white, therefore it's racism. They don't try to consider any other issues. They don't try to consider any other reasons that could possibly happen, because they've been so brainwashed by this fake word. They only see race in everything, whether it's a disparity, whether it's being slighted or inconvenienced in any kind of way. They look at the race of the people involved and judge it based on that, rather than what really happened. And that's the kind of false perception of reality I'm talking about. It's entirely in their heads. The cop could have pulled them over because they were speeding, because they weren't driving right, because their tags were expired. But they're never going to tell you that, because they'd rather race bait and act like the victim. You understand? And I'm not saying it never happens. Maybe there are some cops out there that legitimately don't like black people. That can happen too. But it's a very rare thing, and it's not... Again, that's just hate, and that's something you can deal with that way rather than trying to call these fake words, rather than obsessing over them, so that way you're not seeing it where it's not, like many people are assuming.
We hear these terms put about, such as subliminal racism or subliminal racial bias, and it's meant to imply that people such as me and you, even though we don't judge people by race, that we have ingrained in our minds that subliminally, that we subconsciously do treat people differently based on race. Though having said that, I do think that culture, which can be from a nation, definitely there's nothing wrong with cultural bias or being a culturalist, as it's called. That's a completely different thing. That's different from race.
Honestly, I think most people do treat people differently based on race, but it's not necessarily driven by anger. It's a lot of times it's driven by fear. You know, a lot of people, they'll watch what they say around black people, for example, because they're afraid of the backlash. They're afraid of how they might react to certain things. You know, so people do treat each other differently based on race, but it's not necessarily a terrible thing. It's just how life is and always
has been. Are you talking about that they might not say a certain thing because they fear that the black person might take it the wrong way? Is that what you're implying?
Yeah, dude, they're literally afraid of them. You notice how Antifa, no one really cared about them. They never tried to support them. But once BLM came about, they supported them. Why? Because they're afraid of black people. They're legitimately afraid of them. Legit. And that's not racism. It is them treating people differently based on their skin color. But it's not this fake word racism. It's fear. That's what that is. And I wanted to make a point that I forgot to mention about the black people being killed by cops. When you really look at the violence statistics and the actual crime rates, white people were actually killed more disproportionately more by police for violent crimes than black people. So they're not even being treated differently there. This whole idea of systemic racism, that people are treated differently systemically by cops, by the institutions based on race, it's not really true. It is true in the sense that you have institutions that will actually treat white people and Asians badly, like colleges, for example. They'll put minority races over white and Asians because they're so-called overrepresented in these colleges. But as far as systemic racism goes, it's just another fake word because people are just looking at the race. They're finding differences. They look at the race, and that's their conclusion they draw without actually looking into the real root causes. If we drop this fake word, we can start seeing, okay, what's really going on here? What's the real root causes? And then we can solve things. But as long as we focus on so-called systemic racism, nothing's ever going to change.
You're absolutely right when it comes to, well, I call Antifa a white organization because it pretty much is, that when they meet as they call a person of color, they treat them extremely differently to how they, mm-hmm. they would if they met the white person. It's them that have reintroduced this race-based identity system because, well, I'm 30, you're 25. Well, we're sort of near the same age, but I remember growing up in the 90s and 2000s, when I was at school, we didn't think, we knew about racism in the past, but we felt that we were entering to an era now where it was in the past and we didn't care what a color a person was. We treated them exactly the same, but now groups like Antifa and the universities have reintroduced the concept of racial division. And going back to Chaz or Chop in Seattle, they actually became racially segregated.
Even worse, they enacted the same so-called police brutality that they accused the police of doing. I don't know if you heard of the story, but there were two black kids that went through a joyride through the Chaz in a stolen car. It was like 14 and 16 years old, so they're just teenagers, right? They're not even adults. They do a joyride. Apparently, they were shooting a weapon, possibly, we don't know. And the so-called security forces there, the Antifa security guards with their guns, with their AK-47s, they run down the car and, without trying to ask them any questions or anything, shoot them through the windows. The windows are up. And they just shoot them. And they killed one of them. One of them got injured seriously, and one of them died. So they literally killed a black kid extrajudiciously. And that's the same thing that they're blaming the cops for doing. It's insane. It just goes to show that they're just as bad as everyone else. They're just as hateful as the people they say they're against. They're just as evil as the people that they act like they oppose. They're just as bad.
Well, let's talk about some of the enablers of this racial division and civil unrest in the United States. Well, the mainstream media. We in Australia, we get all the major news networks here, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. So I've seen firsthand the disintegration of CNN. For example, Don Lemon, he's gone from basically a trying to help genuine help the welfare of African Americans to basically calling white men terrorists. He's been basically the personification of the downfall of CNN. And because of the power of the internet, their fake news, their misinformation about events is easily able to unravel quickly. And obviously the worst hatchet job the US mainstream media did was on Nicholas Sandman and the Covington Catholic High School boys at the March for Life in 2019.
Nicholas Sandman's making out like a bandit from that now, though. His suit was successful. He's getting millions from both them and Washington Post. So good for him, man. But that said, you're right. It's a real shame how far CNN, MSNBC, and most of these other networks have fallen. I'm not even a huge fan of most of Fox News, but at least they're better. They try to be more balanced. They try to show at least a different side of the story. I don't think they're perfect, but they're at least better. The real issue, in my opinion, isn't even these mainstream organizations, though. It's social media. Because what social media does through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, is it automatically creates a bubble for you and your beliefs and your friends. And at least back in the day when there was just TV, you could flip the channel. But now, you're just scrolling through Facebook and you see the same exact narrative by CNN, by radical outlets like the Young Turks and so on, and you don't see anything outside of that. And that's what that's leading to is radicalization. Why do you think the youth is so radicalized today? Why do you think they believe all these crazy things? Because they're in a bubble. They're in a social media bubble that may or may not be driven by CNN or MSNBC, and they do not see anything outside of it. They see only cop videos of police violence. They see only Black Lives Matter supportive narratives. They see nothing else. And so they end up thinking that everyone outside that is crazy because they don't understand where they're coming from, even though their whole world wraps around that. So it's a real shame what's going on, and it's polarizing people because no one knows the other perspectives anymore because they never see them.
I do agree that confirmation bias is a massive problem, but I disagree that social media and the internet have been inherently bad influence. There was for a time in the early 2010s what most people refer to the golden age of the internet and social media, where through YouTube and Google, before they changed all their algorithm, you could really be exposed to all sorts of new perspectives, which was great. But it was also good that the power of the mainstream media and their influence was being diminished. But what we've seen in the subsequent 5 years since is basically the big social media companies, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, basically team up with the mainstream media. And so, for example, if you try to type something in, well, we had the Trump impeachment over the Ukraine phone call. If you tried to go into Google to find some actual first-hand information about it, it would just spit out CNN, New York Times, biased fake news about it.
You can't even name he who should not be named, the whistleblower, in that, even though everyone knows who he was. It's crazy the amount of censorship they do these days towards specifically conservative voices. And I consider myself a very libertarian-leaning guy, but I feel like something needs to be done about it because it's terrible what's happening. And I've experienced this kind of thing too because I have my own YouTube channels and I noticed that they don't get much content, they don't get much views, they don't get much recommendations. But you go on the front page, you see CNN, you see Washington Post, you see New York Times, you see all these mainstream outlets. And I'll admit that social media is not all bad. It's a double-edged sword. It's a tool for good, but it's also a tool for evil. It's also a tool for liars and manipulators to use. And unfortunately, lies spread around the world before the truth even has their shoes on, right? And that's what's happening with social media just as much as it's happened with the mainstream media.
Oh yeah, there's been plenty of social media hoaxes over the years, but going back to, well, the Nicholas Sandman defamation, the reason why the truth was able to come out so quickly is because the two-hour raw footage was able to be published online. And this is also another good thing, that because the mainstream media, they, like, say there's a demonstration that you went to, they might show less than 2 minutes of that. But on the internet, you can see the full 2-3 hours of that, so you can see exactly for yourself what happened.
Not that many people are watching the full thing, right?
But you can
at least
find
it's
it
there.
Yeah,
at least it's there. And Yeah, you're right. Again, it's a double-edged sword, man. It's a tool for good. It allows channels like yours to exist and people can actually see them. But it's also a tool for the liars, for the manipulators, for the children of the lie, for the evil people out there to manipulate the masses. And fortunately, because people are truth seekers, a lot of people are trying to find the truth and they see the lies from the media. They're looking, they're finding people, and they're waking up. You know, my waking up came primarily from social media just as much as many other people. That said, it's also indoctrinating and it's also making people more and more radicalized towards the wrong path too. So you gotta take both these things into account. You gotta, it's one of those things where it's amazing we have it. It's so amazing, but it's like the gun. It's revolutionized things in a great way, but it's also leading to a lot more damage as well. You gotta take the good and the bad.
I mean, with your poster going viral, you would have copped plenty of nasty messages. It's much easier to spread hate and threats. Like, for example, in the old day, death threats were sent by mail. Now you can just message someone a death threat, and it's easy for others to dehumanize people from behind a keyboard, because the things that are said online through the safety of a keyboard, there's no way that many people would repeat them in real life or when confronted by it.
Of course not. Well, some would. Some are legitimately that insane. And the people, they're shouting that at me at the protest too. But they will, most people, when they actually come down to a one-on-one conversation, they're a lot more civil. It's just online, you sort of put on this mask of anger where where it's just easy for you to lash out and troll and do whatever you want because there's no consequences for it. The most someone can do is block you. And I got like over 700 hate mails in my DMs. And fortunately, Facebook marked most of them as spam, so I never read through them, right? But they still sent them. And man, some of the stuff was vicious. It was vicious, but that's how these people are. They legitimately hate. They don't see the hate because they only believe in these fake words. And I understand it, you know. I was there once myself. I used to hate. I used to believe the stuff they believe. And I can see it. So I don't hate them for it. I'm not angry at them for it. I see where they're coming from. And I know that if through social media, right, through the good parts of social media, we start spreading the truth, maybe more of them will come out of it and see that they've been hating like this. Hopefully.
Now, as you said, the United States is much larger than the West Coast and the Northeast cities and states. You're in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is, well, it's known every 4 years as the ultimate swing state. It's also referred to as one of the Rust Belt states, which refers to industrial decay. You had, during 2016, your governor at the time, John Kasich, run for the presidency. Even though it is a swing state, it's elected more Republicans lately than Democrats. So can you just describe what the political culture is like at the moment?
Well, unfortunately, we have a Republican governor, Mike DeWine, now, but a lot of our Republicans, and this is one reason the nation has fallen so much, a lot of Republicans aren't really conservative at all. They're rhinos, Republicans in name only. So they're really very milquetoast Democrats in disguise, and Mike DeWine is among them. The most conservative people out there, the most conservative states, have not shut down at all. They haven't tried to make any mandates, and things have actually worked out decently for them. Mike DeWine, on the other hand, he was all about the shutdown. He was all about the mandates and everything else, and even tried to have a curfew for a little bit, just like what Australia is going through now. And it's a shame because we can't even vote him out for two more years. We just have to deal with this sort of rhino for this amount of time.
With our Premier, Dan Andrews, next state election isn't until November 2022. It seems like an eternity. Definitely, it seemed that the worst governor of them all when it came to the shutdown was Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. She was basically protesters, if you protest the lockdown, I'll extend it more, which is basically the ultimate being a vicious parent leader.
She's got that, like, sort of mean stepmom vibe who wants to control everything. She kind of reminds you of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, you know? She's got that wicked smile about her. You can tell just from looking at her she's evil deep down in the core. And she's one of the ladies that clearly cannot stand it when people don't fall in line and listen to her commands. So she was going hard. And you know, what's really interesting about Whitmer is that she was at the BLM protest. She went and talked to the crowd. Talked to the crowd of people that she said are supposed to be illegal. So it's really interesting how these people work. They'll say one thing to one group of people, but then be completely fine with the other. It's all political in the end. It's all based on their own political schemes. And can't trust anything these people say.
And didn't Michigan have a second wave after that?
I guess so. I attribute part of the so-called second wave to just we're doing a lot more testing. We're really honing down on where the coronavirus is, and we're testing all sorts of people. I think that's part of it. I'm not in Michigan, so I can't say how badly it is over there. I haven't looked into it. Here in Ohio, just to give an example, we have our own second wave, right? But if you actually look at the deaths, the coronavirus deaths, which I believe are also a law statistic, it hasn't gone up. It hasn't spiked at all. The amount of daily deaths since early June or late May has not changed. It hasn't spiked like the number of cases has. So it tells me that something else is going on there. That's it. It's not like I don't believe in it. I just don't think the case numbers is giving us the full picture of what's going on. But unfortunately, governors like DeWine, like Whitmer, like the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, they've believed into this fear. They haven't looked at the other stats out there. They haven't looked at the real science behind it. And so they're overreacting to it.
Well, here in Victoria, it is, it's a legit second wave in terms of deaths. During the first wave, or as I refer to it, the phony wave, we had 22 Victorians die. In this second wave so far, as of today, we've had 159 Victorians die. Though we are in the middle of the really cold Melbourne winter, it is absolutely freezing at the moment, wet and windy, which it leads to more influenza infections every winter. We had a really bad flu season in Australia last year. But I've compared our state premier, Daniel Andrews, to Andrew Cuomo in that it's the government's own stuff-ups in terms of, here it's been mismanagement of hotel quarantine, then not safeguarding the aged care facilities. There's also a lot of health workers that have tested positive as well. Warehouses, abattoirs, they've had outbreaks as well. They've really fallen behind on the content tracing, and it's just been one disaster after another. But apparently it's all our fault, us Victorians, for not following the rules.
That's what they always do, man. They always try to make up some excuse to avoid admitting that they're wrong. These people are liars. They're always lying about everything. You see it all the time with Andrew Cuomo acting like his management of the crisis and Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City, their management was so great. But they're the ones that literally took coronavirus patients into nursing homes.
Yeah, which that is
out,
catastrophic.
Into them. But no one mentions that. CNN won't bring it up. They'll praise Andrew Cuomo as if he's this amazing leader. And they'll act like Trump is the bad guy, that Trump is responsible, when about half the deaths in the entire United States came from New York. Of course, that has nothing to do with the governor. No. That's just a coincidence.
It's been on display, the dysfunctions that can occur between federal, state, and also in the US local governments as well. And we're also seeing that here with our Victorian state government and our Australian government. Our Victorian government is run by Labor, which is our left-wing party. The party that's in power federally is the Liberal Party, which is our conservative party. And obviously, having a Labor progressive premier in Dan Andrews went hard on the shutdown the first time, which didn't work, was slow to reopen, and were the worst for it. And you saw with governors like Whitmer in Michigan, Trump, he was wanting the states to open. He's now arguing that the school should reopen. He had his tweets, liberate Michigan. He actually showed that when it comes to things such as this, the president is actually quite powerless. And then, for example, in Georgia, for example, there was disagreements between the governor of Georgia and the mayor of Atlanta on the shutdowns and reopening.
It's interesting. Trump will say all these different things about local politics, but he doesn't actually tend to do much on the local level. He waited like a month or so before he tried to actually put federal law enforcement into Seattle, for example. And I'm glad he did it eventually. But he actually does keep a very light touch when it comes to state and local governance, which I respect a lot. That said, he might have to start doing more, because a lot of these local municipalities, a lot of these governors, a lot of these mayors really are doing everything they can to harm their own constituencies, it seems. They're trying to keep, you know, in Cincinnati, they're making it so that kids only go to school half of the week and the other half they're at home. What's that going to do to the parents who have to go to work, right? What's that going to do to the kids that aren't really going to be socializing with their friends like they should be? It's a shame what's going on, and I'm not sure what Trump could even do about it from the local level, but I hope something is done about it, because I really worry about these kids, man. Imagine having to spend the entire school year inside on your computer. That is terrible. That's not how you should live your life as a child. And I know this because I was raised on the internet, and it's not a good thing to do. It's going to do a lot more harm to these kids than it could ever help. It's going to do a lot more harm than the coronavirus ever could. And I really hope things open up like that, man. But we only have Trump's voice and the will of the local politicians to go by, fortunately.
Well, we have in Victoria under our stage for all children in the state are doing remote learning from home. It's been in place throughout the whole, not the schooling, but the if you can work from home, you must. That has been in place in Victoria since the pandemic began. So I can't imagine just how difficult it is for both children and educators during this time as well, and also parents as well to help juggle and supervise everything at the moment, let alone the ones who are unsure whether they'll have a job at the end of this. And what we saw, the United States, its GDP has retracted 32% in the last quarter, which is staggering.
It's interesting that it's retracted like that, but at the same time, stocks are looking good. You know, S&P is up, NASDAQ is up.
That's probably due to the money being pumped in.
I don't know what's going on there, honestly. But I think things are slowly getting back to normal. They would already be back to normal by now if it weren't for a lot of these governors trying to keep everything shut down for good and trying to destroy businesses more. Governor DeWine, our so-called Republican governor, set a curfew for bars where they have to close down by 11 p.m. and they have to stop serving drinks at 10, which is a killer for bars. They make most of their money at 10 p.m.
Bars are shut here, so
even worse there. And it's terrible. It's terrible what's going on. It's just destroying businesses. It's destroying lives over a virus that we're actually learning to manage really well. And it's unfortunate that people are dying of it, sure, but we've got a lot of therapies. We got everything we need, at least in the U.S., to manage it. But these people are so afraid of what it looked like 2 months ago rather than what it looks like now, that they're willing to make things worse and worse. And I mean, I think a lot of kids are probably going to have to homeschool, because there's no point. What's the point of going to a public school if you're going to be staying at home anyways? There's no point at that point. The reason people don't homeschool is because they want the kids to socialize. So what's the point of that? And being indoctrinated by the public school system, which has awful teachers and a lot of awful things they do, why would you do that when you could just raise your own kids and teach them the way you want to teach them? I think a lot of homeschooling is going to be coming into effect within the next year, for sure.
Yeah, that might be the silver lining, because we've seen public education and the university system has done to the millennials and some Zoomers. I'm not sure if you classify yourself as a millennial or a Zoomer.
Millennial. I'd say. Around the cups, though. I was born in 1984, and I believe Zoomer is like 93, is like 96 and above, I believe. But it's always up in the air. I look like a Zoomer.
Yeah.
And if people want to think I'm a Zoomer, they can think that. People will always ask my age, and I'll just, unless I'm with them in a conversation like this, I won't even answer them. I'll just let them think what they want, because I find it funny.
Yeah, it's a fun sort of game. We'll have a look at the worldometers here. So California is still got the most cases. Florida is, well it's the southern states that are experiencing the second wave. But you have a look, Florida is nearly at top the number of cases. But if you look at deaths, it is way below what New York is or New Jersey. And credit to Governor Ron DeSantis there, who's not shutting down there. All the cities are still open there, and a lot of the cool conservative libertarian personalities that I follow are based in Florida, such as Laura Loomer, Roger Stone, Enrique Atterio, Jacob Wall. It seems to be sort of the, if you're going to have a second wave or mass infection there, you'd rather be in Florida. And I'm glad that Ron DeSantis has sort of stood his ground there with the staying open.
There are plenty of states that have stood their ground and have still come out on top. I believe it's either North or South Dakota. Their governor never shut anything down. Probably local cities did, of course, but the governor never did a shutdown at all. She just said, well, this is unconstitutional. I can't do that. Which is the right answer. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to disobey the Constitution, even in a pandemic. And no one talks about North Dakota or South Dakota, do they? Because they never had a problem. They never had a problem with it. Unfortunately, New York and New Jersey got the brunt of the deaths, partly because of mismanagement, but also because it was such a new thing, we didn't know what to do about it. Now that we got all these new treatments, now that we got all these ventilators, now that we got our stuff, you know, our ducks in a row, it's a lot easier to handle. And again, with the testing, in Florida, they're probably testing a lot more young people, too, in proportion to what New York was first testing when they first got their coronavirus pandemic there. So a lot of it has to do with a lot more testing, a lot of it has to do with a lot better therapies, and of course, it's probably warmer down there as well. So fortunately, we're managing this a lot better now. I don't see the point of continuing this shutdown when it's clear from cases like Florida, from the late second wave cases where they're having a lot of cases but a lack of deaths, it's clear that we've made this virus a lot less deadly than maybe it once was. We don't have to worry about it so much anymore. Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah, we have to protect the old people. We have to protect the elderly, which is what they're doing in Florida. But we don't need to shut down our entire lives now that we understand how to tackle it.
Well, Trump in this is second wave. He sort of seems to be taking a sort of much more serious line on the coronavirus. For example, he started wearing a mask now. He canceled the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville, Florida, because of the rising cases there. It's well, it's less than 3 months away. Well, it's not just the presidential election, it's the congressional election, a third of the Senate is up for election. There's a whole bunch of, you vote for everything over in the United States. And, well, Biden is in the lead at the moment, but don't take that to the bank, especially with Biden's continuing gaffes. And then there's also the controversy over mail-in ballots, which Twitter and Facebook, they're always keen to censor Trump's criticisms on mail-in ballots. How do you see things playing out?
Well, first off, I like to say that Trump wore a mask once at a medical facility, so take that to the bank as it is, because that's like the one place you should wear a mask at, right? It's a medical facility. But on the mail-in ballots, it's going to be an absolute crapshoot. It's going to be a dumpster fire because our USPS is not prepared for that kind of thing. And we've seen examples, of course, like you said, Facebook is suppressing the examples of mail-in ballots going awry in New York, in New Jersey. It's going to be a big mess. And thank God we have a president who's willing to say it and willing to say, hey, mail-in ballots, this isn't going to work well. What's going to end up happening if a lot of states implement this, and Nevada already has, is that we're not going to know the results of the election on November 3rd. We're not going to know because the mail-in ballots aren't going to be in. We have a case in New York right now where they still don't know what the mail-in ballot results were 6 weeks later. Imagine what would happen if we don't know the results of the presidential election for one of the most tumultuous presidencies in history, one of the most controversial for months. If it gets to that point, and I think the Democrats might be planning this, if it gets to the point where on January 20th, they don't have a president yet because the mail-in ballots are still coming in, by constitutional decree, Nancy Pelosi would be the new president and they would have to assign from there. So it could be another attempt at subverting the actual rule of the people here, or it could just be that they want to try to get Biden in through stuffing the ballots, through cheating, through all the plays they can do. Because one thing Democrats are notorious for, and Republicans are guilty of this too, but it's mostly Democrats, is cheating. They'll use every trick in the book. And if you give them mail-in balloting, if you give them mail-in voting, they're going to cheat as much as they can. They're going to harvest as many ballots as they can. They're going to stuff those ballot boxes with dead people, with all sorts of things going on, if they're able to. So hopefully it doesn't happen. Hopefully the governors of our separate states stand up and fight back against it. Hopefully Trump wins his lawsuit with Nevada, who is trying to do mail-in voting, and we don't let this fly, because if it does, it's going to be sour grapes for whoever loses, right? Because either side can say, oh, well, mail-in ballots are faulty. I don't think I actually lost. And either side can do this. So even in the best case scenario, the best case scenario is we get our ballots all in by November 3rd and we count them up and we know who wins. Even in that best case scenario, someone's going to play sour grapes and never going to let go of it, because the election might have been cheated, and they would be reasonable to do that. It's going to be terrible, and it's only going to cause more strife, more destruction, and more hatred among us, because it's got so many problems, man. I'm really worried about it, honestly.
Well, they're both Democrat and Republicans. They're known for their electoral tricks.
Yeah.
One that you didn't mention was gerrymandering, which is creating these bizarre-looking districts so that whoever's in charge of the redistricting, depending on who controls the legislature, so they can have more safe congressional districts. In Australia, we have a independent Australian Electoral Commission for our federal elections, and also, well, we've had its term postal voting here, which is, well, that's been happening for the past 50 plus years, but so we've had practice at it, but it is slow. That the counting on the night, if it's really close, they'll have to wait a few days, maybe even a week, for all the postals to come in.
That's the same thing that happened here in Cincinnati with our local election. We had people up for city council, people up for county commissioner, and we didn't know the results until like a week later. But if you put that on a large scale for an entire nation, it's going to be a disaster. And it's not even about it being slow. It's also about just the fact that it can be cheated so easily. Absentee ballots are a thing, and they've been a thing for a long time, where you mail in your ballot, but that has a process to it. That is something where you sign up for it. You tell the elections board, hey, I want an absentee ballot. They send you it, and then you return it. But with what a lot of these states are trying to do with mail-in voting is they're going to just look at their election rolls, which are outdated. They have dead people on it. They have people that have moved. And they have people that have no reason to have voting rights anymore. They might be criminals now. They're sending all of them ballots just by default without them asking. And so you're going to get a lot of ballots that shouldn't be there. You're going to get people that get like three ballots in the manual when they're supposed to get one. And if you're willing to cheat to try to win, you're going to fill all three of those ballots and get away with it. Imagine if that happens on a massive scale, the amount of fraud that could take place.
And then, of course, there's the a lot of states don't require voter ID to vote. In Australia, you don't need to show ID to vote. You just say your name, and they look it up on the electoral roll. They mark you off, and that's it. So it's quite difficult to get this common sense reform through, because, well, it's mainly the progressive parties who say, oh, not everyone has ID, or it's a secret racist tactic to suppress the minority vote. That's what they always come up with.
It's amazing how people that they say they're for voting rights, quote unquote, are okay with a system that dilutes your actual vote by allowing people to defraud it and get votes that they shouldn't be getting. I mean, it's really a political agenda. Just you have to understand that you can't take anything these leftists say at face value. It's always a lie. There's always some hidden motive. And in this case, the hidden motive is to get more votes. They're trying to bring more illegal aliens in. They're trying to bring more people in that can't vote, that shouldn't vote. And they're going to allow them to vote by not having them require ID. And they act like it's about voting rights. They act like it's about, oh, making sure everyone can vote. But it's very patronizing to think that black people don't have licenses. Mm. Like, who are these coddled, sheltered suburbanites that believe that black people are so dumb, are so uneducated, are so useless, that they can't have their own driver's license needed to vote? It's insane. And it just shows the actual hatred within the left. They don't even like black people either. They see black people as less than. And it's a real shame that it's like that. They're just using them as cannon fodder for their own political agenda, and in the process, actually defrauding and diluting the votes of real citizens.
It's called the biggest bigotry of low expectations. White man's burden, or white savior complex is what it's referred to. Now, we'll finish the show with, obviously, there's more to your life community work than just holding up a sign about racism at a rally. You're a man of faith and also community activism as well.
Right on. Well, I do activism mostly through online right now. I have a few different platforms. I'm a diabetic, actually, and it's not politically related, so I'll just mention it in passing. I do have a page where I go over managing diabetes in a very particular fashion that works really well for me, called Tame Type 1. That's on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and also the website, tametype1.com. As far as this goes, as far as showing people the truth and exposing the lies, I have a new page I made called The Lies Among Us, or called Lies Among Us. You can find that on Facebook, you can find that on YouTube, which I just started, so it doesn't have a lot on it yet, it just has two videos on YouTube. But it goes over my entire explanation why racism doesn't exist. It goes over my philosophy, it has a lot of Christian values within it. And not only that, but it also, it only 10 subscribers, yeah, just started it. It's it's also going to reveal the truths that a lot of people don't want to hear. It's going to take on a lot of sacred cows. I'll be exposing the lies of sexism, homophobia, so-called equality, and a lot of other issues that people take for granted and just assume are true. And through doing this, I hope to expose lies to people. I hope to expose where hate really is and wake people up to the spiritual battle that's really going on rather than the fake battle that the left, the liars, the media want you to see.
Yeah, it's an important community service. And going onto your diabetes awareness, this is the other thing about the coronavirus pandemic with the canceling of non-urgent elective surgeries and emptying out the hospitals, preparing for the influx of coronavirus patients. We still have to be aware of other health conditions and diseases because there are still, well, there's still people dying of natural causes such as, well, Regis Philbin recently, most iconic TV host of all time. But there's also people who do have, well, back conditions, these sorts of things, and they still need treatment during this time. There needs to be awareness about that. We on our Victorian Department of Health and Human Services website, everyone goes to it for coronavirus, but they put down an alert because there was a syphilis outbreak, which I found quite interesting, but that just goes to show that there's other diseases out there. We shouldn't lose sight of that other people suffer and need treatment for things as well.
Right. And I mean, I'll say there's been one silver lining with this is that telehealth has become a very prominent thing now. It's become a lot more legal to do, a lot easier to do. And that is great for a lot of people that don't want to leave the home but still want to get their prescriptions from doctors and stuff like that. And that's what we've been doing here in the States, at least, telehealth. At the same time, you're right. You have a lot of people that need to get surgeries, that need to get checkups, need to get screenings, and they weren't able to get them for a long time because the hospitals were all shut down. And so who knows? Maybe it was a case that more people died as a result of the shutdowns there in the hospitals and everywhere else than died of coronavirus. It's hard to tell. We have no way of knowing, unfortunately. There's no way to really count that all up.
Well, not at
the
moment.
But it's possible, and it's something to consider. Yeah, well, maybe in the future we could, in hindsight, when it's all over. But it's hard to do right now, and it's like people are trying to do all this draconian control without considering the consequences. It's a real shame.
Definitely. It's challenging times, but it's great that there's brave people such as yourself, genuinely brave in what you're doing. I know that, given your subscriber account, you're up against the YouTube algorithm. Hopefully I can give you a few more. I'll put the link to your channel in the description. Please you got to not just hit the subscribe button, but the bell for notifications as well, because that's the
ring
other,
the bell.
Yeah, the other trick that YouTube does these days, and we'll follow the US election closely. You and I will keep in touch, even though the time difference is, well, we're literally on the other side of the world, but we still have a lot in common.
It's amazing how we can be completely different places and still have a one-on-one conversation like this. Like, once again, the internet, it's an amazing thing, but it can also be a tool for evil, and it's good. I love that it exists, but at the same time, I don't quite love that it exists. You know what I mean? Sometimes some days I'm like, man, kind of wish social media didn't exist. But I'm glad it is. I'm glad I was able to talk to you today, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk one-on-one with you about this.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, and I know my audience has as well. So that wraps up Wilms Front for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Melbourne time, both on YouTube and DLive with, well, who knows what's going to be the state of Victoria by that time. There might be a Trad Tasman Talk episode 7 p.m. Tuesday. I'll have to confirm with Due And of course, there'll be another Uncuckables on Thursday and another Wilmsfront on Friday as well. Keep checking out theunshackled.net for our latest news and analysis. Have a good weekend. Stay safe. Stay happy. Cheer yourself up. We will get through, I will say, this lockdown. It's going to be tough, but us Melburnians and Victorians, we can do it. So thank you, everyone.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah, go for it.
I want to remind everyone watching this and to see the sign. Be brave. You can stand up too. I'm not special. I'm not anybody. I stood up. You can stand up too. Stand up for what you believe in, and don't be afraid to back down, even if you're a scrawny little white guy like me. You can do it. Don't be afraid. Don't back down. Don't have fear, and we can change the world.
Well, those are nice words to finish the show. Good night, everyone, and good day to those in the United States.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.